el empresario quiere. Tenemos el caso de Arts, del por lo que diría, por ejemplo, Jill Scott, o por ejemplo el caso que ha dado recientemente en España, no en el País Vasco, de Disonancias, donde los proyectos que se pedían a los artistas era que experimentaran materiales de la industria. Entonces, ¿dónde está aquí el arte? ¿Dónde está el concepto? Y no parece que sea tan fácil que la industria pueda... No tan fácil que la industria pueda realmente pagar el arte tal y como tú lo expones así de claro.
That's a very important and good question, because maybe I was not clear enough in this point. What I'm proposing and what we are doing here is, in most of the cases, I don't go to the industry and ask them for money for an art project. What we are doing, and I think this is the kind of role model maybe of Ars Electronica that others could adopt as well, is we are considering our institution and the role of Ars Electronica, as I mentioned, as this kind of broker between the industry and the artists. Because as an individual artist, of course, it's very, very difficult to really negotiate with marketing people. And sometimes you might have luck and the guy in the marketing department thinks, oh, you're a nice artist, I give you some charity, some money. What we are proposing and trying to do is to kind of separate or distillate from all these activities, from the art side, to filter out those things that are useful for the industry. And then we go to the industry and say, we are offering you things that you need. We want money for this. We don't want you to pay money for the arts. Because this is, as soon as you do this is the old model. Formerly, we used to ask the Pope or the Church for money. Then we asked the Dukes for the money. Then we asked the governors and the mayors for money. Now we are asking the industry for money. I think the interesting possibility is that we are in a position that we are not only beggars. And of course, it's a paradigm shift. And I never would say that this is the only optimal or best model. It has also its payoffs, and it doesn't work for every type of art and artistic activity. But the individual artist cannot do this. If I would ask, you know, some artist, and if, for example, Zach Lieberman would have to negotiate with the Austrian Telecom on his own to get money or a contract there, first of all, he probably would not do it, because it would waste too much time of his. It's much better if he is doing his beautiful and great art project. But we can do this negotiation. And this is one of the major questions addressed in this paper for this series of lectures, is how can the cultural institutions, the cultural system, how can this respond to this? And I think that's much more the way and the model to have such research departments in institutions, in public institutions, because from the standpoint of a public institution, you have a totally different power to negotiate with an industry than an individual artist. And on this level, I think it's possible to make this exchange between these two things. And also the risk, you know, for us it's much easier to bear the risk. I mean, the example with the satellite navigation, of course, is one of the really successful. We made 5 other projects with Siemens. It's not even worth to show the result, because also we didn't have the great solution and the great idea. But as an institution, it's much easier for me to take the risk and deal this and make this deal with Siemens than again for individual artists. I'm not sure if this is, but
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an institution, but the result is that the artist
materials. Bueno, prefiero hablar en castellano. los artistas han tenido que... las propuestas que tienen que hacer los artistas están más basadas en algo formal que no en un contenido. Y no estoy hablando de artistas individuales que hayan ido a buscar ayuda a una industria, sino de proyectos que se están lanzando a través de instituciones, a través de centros culturales, en los que se está confundiendo la terminología de trabajar, de que artistas que trabajen con tecnología supediten su concepto al concepto o la necesidad que tiene la empresa, ¿no? La industria. No es vuestro caso, no lo creo, pero quizás sea el único.
Yeah. Well, what I'm calling for is that in the future many institutions and much more should take the risk or the investment to create something like the Future Lab, because this it is an exception nowadays, because very few institutions and especially museums do have a research department. And the important point with the Future Lab maybe here is, of course, this satellite navigation is not an art project. I mean, we never would dare to say this, but. Because of these projects, we are able to sustain and support this Future Lab. Because the Future Lab actually doesn't need any public money. All the money the Future Lab needs, also to do the art projects every year, to support the artists in residence, to make new art projects for the festival, all this money is earned in this research project. And so if any institution says, well, we cannot afford any kind of artistic research, this would be a model to do this. And I'm sure also in Spain there are enough high-tech companies who would be very interested in collaboration with creative people. And this is one model, of course, to earn the money so that you can do also artistic research and design and innovation. And I think this it needs a different approach from both sides, from the institutions as well as from the artists. And nevertheless, it's also interesting that, for example, with Siemens, you know, after we made this very successful project, of course it was much easier for me to talk the marketing department of Siemens also into an artist in residence program. Because I was showing this project that we did with the software department to the marketing people and said, you know, see what outcome you have. So why don't you just give someone money for a Future Lab so that we can get in more creative people into the lab, and this might be, again, profitable for you. And so they are now paying every year €20,000 to invite an artist for 3 months to come to Linz. And that's, I mean, you know what artist in residence programs usually what money they have, and if you're suddenly able to offer €20,000, that's these are the kind of payoffs that are there. So I think also on the economic level, it can be really profitable.
Vale. Bueno, quería preguntar ¿por qué crees que hay tanto? O sea, ¿por qué crees que desde el mundo del arte se critica tanto a Future Lab, o sea, a Ars Electronica, desde dentro mismo del arte? Mm-hmm. Why you think that you have some inconvenience?
inconvenience with the. Of course, yeah. No, that's an absolutely important question, and I think on the main reason is. That, and I don't have a big critique for this, but that still a lot of people have a kind of concept of, you know, how to say it, a kind of purity of art. And that as an art institution, the only thing you should do is handing over some money to the artist and say, yeah, goodbye, I see you at the opening of the exhibition. This doesn't happen. Those art institutions are not existing. So the danger that projects that we are doing are kind of selling the art is of course there. Also the danger that with this, I could show you know, some of the interesting public art projects that we're doing for new buildings of companies. Of course, what we are doing is with the ideas of our artists and the know-how of our Future Lab, we are making a beautiful building for an ugly company. This is something that many people find disputable or find bad. I think on an individual basis, I'm very happy to discuss this critique with people and artists. On a general level, I just can accept it. I think it's one of the important elements of arts is a certain subversive aspect and a certain denial to go too close into the normal life. This is, I don't have anything to say against it. What I'm proposing and what we are doing is finding other possibilities as well. And I think nowadays, whether you are prostitute yourself, I mean, we just had in Austria this last year, the Mozart year, you know, 250 years of Mozart birth. The only way to get money from, you know, special money, project money from Austria the last year was do something with Mozart. I don't see a difference whether I support the tourist industry by making Mozart project or whether I support the software industry by making a nice building for SAP or Siemens. The second opportunity to get money last year was the European presidency. And I'm also not so sure if this is always the nice deal to support the Austrian government or any government in making a good figure at conferences at the European presidency. We did both. We worked for the Mozart, we did some Mozart project, we did some European presidency project, we did some industrial projects. If this would be our only activity, I would also say, okay, that is a little bit strange, but this is part of our activity. We have our festival, for example, the budget for the festival is, I think, more than 90% of the festival budget is our public money that we are getting. And this is for purpose, because I don't want to jeopardize ideas that are coming from the artists for the festival, because maybe the one or other sponsor says, oh, that's a little bit too tricky or has too much critique for me. We take money for the competition. The competition is great. We have 35 international experts in the jury. No marketing footsie of any company really has the guts to say, I don't want this project getting the first prize if he has elaborated public procedure to elect project. So I think it's also important to look at projects and the context. There are areas where it's pretty easy and safe to take the money from the industry, and there are other areas where it's better not to do it together with the industry. And this is why, again, I think it's the role and the responsibility of the institution to find out these ways. And not always, I think it's a little bit a deficit of fantasy if the only response of museum directors is always, well, I don't get enough money from the mayor or from the governor, so I cannot do anymore. I think that's also the challenge for the directors and the cultural managers. Not so much that I would say it's just a challenge to run to the industry and say, give me some money because the governor doesn't give it to me. But to find a good strategies and a balance and especially find out, and this is in the same way as it's curatorial work. As a curator, you think, you know, what type of projects do I put in a public space? What projects do I put in the white box or black box of the museum? In the same way, you have to kind of find out where you can get finances without compromising the art and the artists.
¿Más preguntas?
Josh, en una pregunta quizá personal, ¿no? ¿Qué siente una persona como tú cuando recorre el mundo y ve que las instituciones museísticas de arte contemporáneo, estas nuevas formas artísticas, se exponen de la manera más tradicional, ¿no? Una pregunta concreta, eso quiero saber tu opinión, ¿no? Tus sensaciones. Una pregunta concreta, ¿es real el galardón que dais del premio? ¿Es una reproducción de la victoria de Samotracia? Me parece curioso. Y luego ya para acabar una reflexión, porque es una frase muy significativa de este debate que creo que se ha abierto ahora en torno a lo que al propio concepto de arte, ¿no? De Erwin Panofsky, que dice que algo así como si el arte comercial tiene el peligro de acabar como una prostituta, el arte no comercial tiene el peligro de acabar como una vieja solterona, ¿no?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think an important point is, you know, when in discussions like this and when I make presentations like this, it of course always sounds like this is the only way how artistic production and presentation should be nowadays or in the future. I'm totally aware, and I have good arguments and reasons for this also, that the sort of the conventional or traditional way of making art, as well as presenting and perceiving art, has very good reason to go on and to remain. There is, I mean, this is the human nature. We have these two different basic modalities of learning and experiencing. The one is looking at something and contemplating it, and the other one is participating. Nowadays, with the digital technology, the possibility of participating and using your own experience to get information and to deal with content has been dramatically rising. And very fast, the technology has been introduced within a few years. Culturally, we are behind. We are way behind it. It will take probably 10 to 20 years more until our culture is at the same point where our technology is nowadays. And this is why I think it's so important to fight for more and more places and opportunities to really take on this challenge of these new cultural techniques and these new cultural paradigms. But nevertheless, we cannot discard the old. Not because we, you know, for ethical reason that you have to value the old, but the old developed because of our human needs. And so what I'm sad and frustrated is not so much seeing many exhibitions that are even very successfully presenting still in the same way, because this can change very easy. What I'm really sad and frustrated is seeing this almost hundreds of buildings, of museums buildings, that are now put up all over Europe, that the only idea is to have a famous architect and to have a nice cultural building, and very, very few considerations about the functionality of the building. Because the building stays at least for the next 50 years. The curator who still thinks, I don't want to deal with the future, is usually in his 50s. He will stay for another 10 years. That's not the big problem. This can change. But the buildings and all the money goes in this building. So I think this is really the point where we should find some ways to address our politicians, because on the one side, they all are talking about creative industry and how innovation and research and all these things are important. On the other side, they have not yet understood how to really, with very simple measurements, how to change this. They should give away the same 50, 70, 100 million euros for a new museum, but let the user of this building kind of participate in the planning process and make sure that there is versatility, different types of functionality for this. Because then both things could be, you know, could live together in cultural institutions. And I know how difficult it is to talk with artists and with architects and politicians about this.
Sí, yo quería preguntar, cuando has presentado las actividades que se desarrollan en el Future Lab, Me ha parecido ver que hablabas de diseño de exposiciones. Quería saber si se organizan en el Future Lab grupos de investigación alrededor del diseño de exposiciones, de los nuevos formatos, y en ese caso, si alguna vez se ha tomado o si soléis tomar como territorio de investigación y de testar nuevas ideas el propio Ars Electronica Festival o alguna de sus las exposiciones adscritas al festival.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the festival, I'm very strongly or very convinced that this is the area where we rather should leave it up to the artists. So I think the festival, in terms of, again, formats and strategies in a cultural institution, the festival is the place where we load up our batteries. This is where people come with totally different ideas, where people take place who never would go into a Future Lab to work there, who have a different approach, who have a different thinking, a different concept. And usually we are delegating the responsibility for, you know, developing exhibitions and formats for the festival rather externally. Because also we need, as an institution, we need constantly this stream of new ideas. We have to load up our batteries, otherwise we would not be able invent or produce new things. We have been in recent years we do a lot of experiments with festival formats, of course. I mean, whether it's Electrolobby and this kind of things that we started in around 2000 and 2001 as a kind of festival format, or even ideas like this year where we went, where we put the whole festival for one day to a monastery, a beautiful Baroque monastery on the periphery of Linz. The initial idea was to do an experiment with the symposium. Because the symposium, the discourse, the exchange of ideas on a theoretical level is a very important part of our festival. And since 27 years, we do it in the same way, more or less. I mean, sometimes we change seats, and sometimes we have frontal presentations, sometimes. But basically, it's panel, presentation, discussion, and this kind of thing. So we thought, doing it in a different way would be going to a place, having lectures in different places at the same time, and creating it much more in a kind of very informal way, where you kind of walk from one theme and one discussion to the other. And of course, you cannot do this in a conference hall, because if you make the same idea in a building where you have one conference room besides the other, immediately you're in the same structure. So formats also need different places and different rooms. And this is why we went to the monastery, for example. So it is a kind of constant experimentation and research that is going on. And the good thing with the festival is this is the place where we can easily risk failure. Because if this monastery day would have been a failure, nobody would have killed us. Nobody would have reduced our funding or so. It's an experiment. It's within an artistic event. The tolerance for failure within a contemporary art festival, of course, is much higher than within, for example, the production of a new exhibition for the Natural History Museum in London, or for a new exhibition for an expo or whatsoever.
Es mi voz. Vale. Dos preguntas. Una, por lo que estoy viendo y tengo oído, parece que estamos en un momento de crisis en el tema de arte, ciencia, tecnología, donde después de las dos últimas décadas que ha habido muchísimos proyectos, muchísima innovación, parece que ahora todo lo que se encuentra es muy repetitivo, donde no hay proyectos nuevos y donde en muchos casos los proyectos que se envían no son de gran calidad. No sé si vosotros os habéis encontrado también con este problema, pero sí que sé que pasa en muchos otros festivales que se hacen. Y la segunda pregunta, que ya es un poco más una inquietud personal, ¿cuál fue el criterio para que el año pasado ganase Paul de Maniris y no The Robotic Chair, cuando parece ser que todo el mundo, todo el público, quedó muchísimo más impresionado con ese proyecto?
Considering the crisis, I have a very different opinion than many of my colleagues. And I think we only can talk about a crisis if we think that the last 20 years were already or had already been a kind of, I don't know, the kind of a high level of artistic production. The problem is that in these 20 years, maybe, so many people became totally acquainted or even addicted to this idea of newness. And of course, the first one or two decades of media art, and also of Ars Electronica, were very strongly coined by, you know, what's the newest interface. And one year we had an infrared interface, and next year we had a camera interface, and then we had a laser interface, and somebody had a triple, triple, super duo interface. And the excitement was always, a new technical strategy. And it's really interesting for me to see that so many people who basically have a very strong art background nowadays are kind of criticizing the contemporary media art production for not being technologically new every year. Most of them are the same people who have for the last 20 years always criticizing, for example, Ars Electronica or artists that we have, that they are only interested in new technologies. And the only thing is that there is a new type of and a new and a new and a new. I think newness in the way as we had it in this 10, 20 years, of course, was extremely important. And I think the experiments, even some of them were aesthetically, formally, sometimes very weak, the experiments were extremely important because they were preparing the way and so forth and so forth. But the experiments never should have been, and especially should not be nowadays, like the benchmark, the criteria. And of course, the technology in the field of digital art is developed. The only thing is, yeah, it can be smaller, it can be faster, and it can be mobile. But in terms of how to use technology and the paradigms, how we can deal with information and communication, this is done. And nowadays, you know, after this excitement of climbing up the peak, we have to face the, you know, I don't know how the English translation would be, but you know, the kind of to also walk through the valleys and make sure that we don't get lost when we're walking through the valley or through the desert. I don't think that nowadays we have more weak projects than we had 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I think that our expectations are bigger. We have some artists, growing number of artists, who have a very high level, who have a very high virtuosity. These artists are very well known. They are represented in many exhibitions and many festivals. And of course, it's not so easy to come up every year with, you know, 5 or 10 new talented artists who are able to produce on the same level as, you know, the old masters, as Jill Scott, Jeffrey Shaw, Masaki Fujihata, and all these people did 20 years ago and sometimes still do nowadays. But this is something we have in any other art form. And I think if we're talking art criteria, then we should be fair enough to really compare it on a fair and on an even level. The second question, what was the criteria to choose a robotic chair?
Why Paul de Maniris has won the... ¿Por qué el proyecto de Paul de Maniris fue el ganador? Bueno, es cuando creo que Robotic Chair era un proyecto bastante más potente, aunque no tuviese el background que quizá tenía como artista Paul de Maniris. y cuando además al público fue el que más impresionó. Entonces, creo que mucha gente nos preguntamos por qué, no ha ganado The Robotic Chair, ¿no? Suponiendo que realmente el proyecto sea una silla autónoma, que tampoco lo sé, yo creo que sí, quiero creérmelo. Si es así, me parece que es un proyecto realmente muy complicado.
Yeah. It was a long discussion in the jury, and there were moments where robotic chair actually was in discussion even for the first prize. One of the problems was that in the presentation video, some of the kind of solutions and informations how the project really performs, not technically, but how it's really performing in the situation of presentation, were not really visible, but even presented in an obviously euphemistic version. So the video that was presented was very nicely cut, and it looked like that this chair would, you know, seamlessly chup, and it's standing there. And of course, everybody in the jury knew from their own background that in reality this cannot be true. So what are they trying to... And this is, of course, in competitions and in jury meetings. You know, the way how a project is presented is probably at least 50% of the decision that is made. The second point was, and I think this is a change that is going on with the pre-Ars Electronica more and more in the recent years. And I think this has also to do with this crisis or not crisis, but at least it's a kind of inflation of media art that we have. I mean, there are the numbers of contributions to the pre-Ars Electronica tripled in the last 5 years. So it's really the media art production, at least in quantity, is extremely rising. And in this situation, juries more and more tend also to kind of look at continuity in the quality and production. We had this already the last 2 years in the music category, for example, when Marianne Amaché or this year Alain Radic got the prize. The main thing was also there that the jury was kind of overwhelmed by the number of really good projects, no doubt about it. Not talking about the number of crap that is submitted, but there are enough good projects still every year. But because of this inflation, you look for what is the outstanding. And the outstanding, of course, the more artistic production you have every year, the outstanding more and more is seen in kind of long-term continuity. Artists who have been doing ideas and projects and concepts not only since 2 years, but since 20 years maybe. And especially in comparison with the other projects that were there. I think the prize to Marinis was more given because of all the work that he did than because of the individual project itself. And I think that's a kind of trend and tendency that we see more and more, that kind of masterpieces or the old masters of media art are getting honored now. And for many people, even some people who, you know, nowadays in juries, because we're always trying to have young people as well in the juries, for some of them it's really a kind of, oh wow, there is somebody who did this 20 years ago. And you know, many of these young artists really believe they are inventing these things. And many of them have a very strong ignorance against, they just don't know about the history of this media art. And when they suddenly see, you know, somebody and hear or see about the work that somebody like Paul de Marinis did. And I think, again, in talking about the crisis, I mean, we have hundreds of artists in the quality of you know, Paul de Marinis. So there is, I would not say that we are, you know, lacking or seeing a decline in the quality of the media art. I would see rather the other way around. But of course, it's not going as deep as the quantity goes. And it's interesting, when you go to YouTube, there are, 600 videos about the last Ars Electronica on YouTube. And the robotic chair is the one that has the most views of all the projects. So much to the audience voting. I think 13,000 views or so is only with robotic chair. Drawn has also many.
¿Alguien más tiene alguna pregunta para hacer? Hay tiempo, ¿eh? Si quieren hacerlas, pueden hacerlo. ¿Algún investigador privado que quiera hacer una pregunta? ¿Gestores, comisarios futuros? Artistas, intelectuales.
For those who still don't have enough, here are some some advertisement.
Yeah, I was just curious, a very simple question about the future of Ars Electronica. How do you think actually that the model of the festival after 30 years almost has to change and can change? I know also you're planning some sort of international, I don't know if expansion, but collaboration. Mm-hmm. We seem now to be also now like in the verge of the idea of museum franchising with all this money in the Middle East trying to make, and China, new Louvres and new Pompidou's in Dubai and everything. I was just curious about mm-hmm. your future plans for the model yeah. of the festival and also the new building. How is that yeah. going to change the event?
Well, on the one side, an important development for the future, especially with the new museum, and this means also for the future lab, is to really seriously go into new scientific or technological directions like bioengineering, nanotechnology, and this kind of thing. So there are really interesting applications already nowadays. I mean, with this the first applications of nanotechnology, you can create really interesting, all this organic, flexible displays and solar panels and circuits and things like this. So I think this is, on a practical level, a very important area to also use the museum and the future lab as a portal to create access to these new technologies and new materials and possibilities also for the artists. In terms of genetic engineering, it's mainly a kind of moral and ethical discussions where, again, I think we have to motivate and enable artists to really work with biotechnology and genetic engineering, not just to comment about it, but to work with it, because only if artists are really diving deep into this matter, I think they can become a credible critique also or can make credible alternatives against the mainstream of the technical innovations or developments. In terms of the festival, it's a very tricky point right now because the thing that you see here, this new building for Ars Electronica costs 30 million euros. That's quite a lot of money. And it's absolutely clear that now the city is putting this money into Ars Electronica because 2009 we have cultural capital and Ars Electronica is one of the brides that has to be, you know, put in shape now so that 2009 we are really glowing. But on the other side, this will for quite a while be the major investment of the city. And whenever I ask for more money for the festival or the competition in the next years, I'm sure that I won't get very much attention and mercy for this. And this again is kind of part of this kind of topic here. We tried really seriously to convince the politicians that instead of building these beautiful sarcophagus for Ars Electronica, they should give 1 million euro each year to the festival. Economically, this would have been the same thing because the building, they pay off the building in something like 30 years. 1 million each year, and it would have been the same amount of money for each year to give away for the festival. And I'm absolutely sure that for the reputation that the city wants from Ars Electronica, investment in the festival, with all the international reach out of the festival, would have been more meaningful than investing into a big building for 2009. And we will have big troubles getting the money for the running costs. I mean, the building is 3 times as big as now. Okay, we have 3 times the running costs. We need more employees to deal with this building and all these kind of things. So all also much of our attention in the future will be caught by, you know, how can we finance this building? And how can we make sure that this building is successful? Because if it's not successful, it means Ars Electronica is not successful, and we are also jeopardizing the festival and other things. So we are really like slaves now, based on this, you know, beautiful decision. On the one side, I'm happy. It's great to see that Ars Electronica is so important for the city that they put 30 million on the table. But on the other side, it's a kind of present I'm not so excited actually about. And this is why we think that the developments of the festival have to take place also outside of the city of Linz. Because for many years, Ars Electronica gained its profile by being, you know, this very sharp kind of knife into new directions and new topics, and from nanotechnology to genetic engineering, artificial ambiences, and all these kind of things. These were, you know, really hot topics, and Ars Electronica was very early to discuss these topics. Nowadays, you cannot do this because any little workshop at some university, whether it's in Spain, in Portugal, in Peru, or in the United States, who deals with this topic, because of the internet, is immediately present globally. So the role of a festival to raise themes for the first time, this role is gone. This is over, because this is really done now by the internet, by the blogs. So this kind of new hypeness is covered by the internet. And you have no chance to compete with this with a festival. So what remains is the role as a festival, of a festival as the platform, as the place where people really meet. You can call it flash market, maybe. But this is still a very, very important thing. And I think most of the people who come to Ars Electronica have heard about the projects that we are presenting already before in the internet. Because if you're interested, you're constantly looking at the same web pages we do, you're constantly in touch with the same people we are. In our global world, it's absolutely no problem to know in any little city in Europe everything about media art nowadays. But the difference is here you can experience in a person, or in real, and you cannot only meet the single artist behind a single project, you can meet 100 of them and exchange your ideas and also, you know, present and sell your ideas. And so I think the one of the futures of Ars Electronica is using its reputation and image to be a really valuable platform where artists as well as visitors have their main benefit from going to Ars Electronica, because they have not visibility in terms of the information that they get on the internet, but also in terms of the personal exchange. And it's really interesting to see that especially for those people who are very active in the internet, many of them come to us and say, you know, we have this informal group in the internet. We are discussing this issue since 2 years now online. We want to meet in person. Can you give us a space, a platform at Ars Electronica so that we can invite others? And everybody who is attending festivals or working for a university knows that if you want to meet in person, you need, for example, something like a festival, because you have to write this application for travel support. And if you write, you know, I want to meet my friends, your director will say, yeah, nice, do it in your vacation. If you write, you know, you are going to a festival. So there are kind of very functional elements of a festival that I think are also important in terms of supporting the artists and the communities by bringing them together. And doing this maybe on a more global level is definitely one point. What we are not planning and what would be stupid to only really think about it is kind of franchising like Guggenheim or the Louvre, because the big money in Saudi Arabia as well as in China is interested in the Louvre and in the Guggenheim and not in us, LA something, media art. So, I mean, the contemporary art is a small niche and media art is a small niche within contemporary art. So franchising is definitely not the way to go, but rather collaborating with initiatives who are trying to set up something. We are exporting a lot of our knowledge. So a big part of my time nowadays is kind of educating and informing others how to do a festival, how to set up this kind of activities. And I think we only can profit from this. Because again, when we come to the potential crisis of media art, whether it's one or not, if there is one, the only solution is to have more places for media art, to have more funding for media art, so that we are not just raising quantity, but also quality. So if you want to create a media art in your city, in your village, in your country, come to us. We can give you the blueprints for success. But don't believe me a single word.
Yeah, I have one more, sorry, but I was thinking about it. There was this thing that Cory Doctorow said that I think it was very interesting, which was that the past 20 years have been about the technology, and the next 20 years were going to be pretty much about the politics. Mm-hmm. And he was obviously thinking about things like copyright, DRM, yeah. All the bioethics, all mm-hmm. problems in this sense. Is this something that you think the Future Lab should also address? I mean, are you interested in any way in not only developing projects in the framework of science and technology, but also in the framework of thinking, of from rights and cyber rights to, you know,
political rights and political nightmares. I mean, for the time being, we are especially dedicating the festival to this direction. So we stopped pretending that we have, you know, the topic for the next 10, 15, 20 years, but really looking at issues that are the problems of our time right now. For example, this year in September, the festival will have the title Goodbye Privacy. And it's absolutely clear in which direction it's going. And it was quite a long discussion, and I think it's still a risky process, because talking about privacy, surveillance, and all these kind of things is not very fancy and charming. This is something that is going on everywhere. But in the light of the things that are going on, I don't know how much the German discussion is reflected here in Spain, where the German government definitely wants to have Trojan viruses that they can send to and implement in every computer. So if they need to spy on you because they think you are a terrorist, they just can switch on their virus in your computer, and the virus delivers all the information of what's in your computer. I mean, it's such a drastic change. I mean, this is totally different in its quality from spying to somebody's phone calls. Because this is like really, like if we would be forced to have a policeman sitting in our apartment 24 hours a day and monitoring that we are not doing anything that might be against the law. So there are really such dramatic things. And I think this, the importance of the political or cultural digestion of this development is so strong that a festival like ours has to contribute or tribute some commitment to this. And I'm not sure how the community will react, because of course, yeah, it's not such a fancy thing, but I think it's so important that we have to go in this direction. If the Future Lab also can kind of contribute in its production in a certain way to this, I don't have a clear concept of this right now. We had many discussions always around the Creative Commons licenses and this kind of thing. So One demand coming from the Creative Commons community was, for example, that we force all the artists who are producing projects at Ars Electronica to publish it in common creative license, common creativity licenses. That I think that's absolutely not. That's not an issue. I never would go this direction. I think this is something that has to remain totally in the decision of the artist, whether he or she wants exclusive rights as ever, or whether he or she wants to give it away, give it public as free software or as Creative Commons or whatsoever. So I think this is not the way to go. We have basically a mentality that is very in favor of, you know, open source things. Many of the projects, especially those projects who are made by the Future Lab itself, are the software we give away as open source, or are based anyway on open source. But very often it's also software or IP that are coming from artists. And as Future Lab or as Ars Electronica, we should not intervene in this area. And in this question, the IPs of artists are as valuable as and important for us as the IP of Siemens. So the collaborations with the industry has the same standard in terms of protecting the rights of the artists as the projects that we are commissioning. So even, for example, if we are commissioning an artist in residence project, the only rights that we are asking for is that we are allowed to exhibit the project in our exhibitions. But no exclusivity. The artists are absolutely free to use their projects in any way they want. They can sell it. Some artists, at least one, who developed his projects in the Future Lab, became a very rich person now because he's selling these projects for $70,000 at the Art Basel in Miami. I hope that my board of directors never really understands what I did by giving these artists all the freedom, because if I would have done it as usual, you know, many, many museums, when they have artists in residence, or like the IRCAM in Paris, they claim all the rights and they can sell it, and the artist, you know, nothing. If we would have done this with John Jarrett, he never would have became famous. So at the end, it would have been the same thing. Because I think as an institution like ours, we cannot really take care of the promotion of these projects and the marketing of this project in the same way as the artists do. I mean, the artists are the best promoters and marketers of their project. It's their interest to sell it to other, to present it at other festivals. We never could do this in the same quality. So this is why I think it's very important, especially again in this role model of the Future Lab, in you know, exploiting artists or not, to really make it very clear that what the artists are producing remains in their responsibility and in their realm as well. So I don't see at the moment some strong possibility how the Future Lab could move in this kind of, you know, political agenda much more. Because the problem is, again here, that this is a totally underfinanced area, and the whole system of the Future Lab is based on asking money from our partners, and not we don't use art budgets or public budgets for the production of the Future Lab.
Regarding that, don't you think that because of the role the model of the exhibit or of the way of presenting the new media work is changing? Also, the role of the institutions as research centers is also being moved away by the private industry. I mean, the Future Lab is part of an institution, but its founding comes from clients. And right now what I'm seeing is that the tendency is that the design companies or the artists themselves becomes entrepreneurs and are founding themselves their research, and they are the ones that are doing well, that are developing and doing research. So I think the institutions are moving apart from that, maybe not wanting to or not willing to, but they are too heavy to move at the same speed that the private industry does. But I think the thing is that the private industry is now taking the research field, and it's merging arts and commercial products very easily. Yeah.
I mean, of course, many artists have to create their own research facilities or their own companies, and that's a tendency that, for example, in the United States is much stronger and much more common and normal than here in Europe still, where we have a much longer and stronger tradition of being funded. So this, you know, there is a father state who takes care of you. Which is a very good system, you know. It's always difficult. I never would make any argument against the European system of social welfare and funding the arts. But of course, in this field, it's now kind of in a critical situation whether this can go on or not, because it's risky for institutions. It's expensive for institutions, and many institutions don't have. Because their budget is also dedicated, and the politicians or whoever gives money to a museum wants visitor numbers back, and of course a laboratory doesn't bring you any visitor numbers, so it's a delicate decision to go this direction. I think for artists it's also an opportunity on the other side, because even compared to an institution like ours, you can be much more flexible, of course, and faster and respond to things. And I have a very strong belief in the, so to say, responsibility of artists. I think artists know very well how far they are willing to go when they are putting their creativity on the market, whether it's the market of design companies or advertising companies or really in a serious research situation. What I think the problem for the institutions is if they don't make some effort in this direction, is that they cut themselves off from a potential stream of innovation, not only in terms of getting innovative projects, but also in terms of, as I said before, thinking of new formats for the festival or the museum. The institution itself never can do this in such an efficient way as if I have, you know, hundreds of artists every year coming to a festival, contributing with new ideas, and being willing to discuss new formats and this kind of ideas with me as curator and director. And so if the institutions hide behind their conventions, I think it's not so much the artists who are getting problems. Because technology is very cheap nowadays, and it's very easy to get the knowledge. I mean, whether it's Arduino or processing all these kind of things or VVVV, I mean, you need just a few days to learn how to make your own batches or your own programs. You need just a few days to learn how to do your own hardware for these things. And so it's not the artists who have the problems, it's the institutions who will have the problems.
Creo que ya es tiempo, ¿no? Gracias por vuestra presencia, por los supervivientes. Y las próximas sesiones son el 9 de marzo y el 26 de abril. Gracias, Gerfried, por tu presencia aquí.